as you think about ways for the higher education system to get more efficient, I think this idea of utilizing these different platforms, Podium being one of them, to offer the right courses and the right programs to students in a cost-effective way is something that is at the forefront of a lot of administrators' minds these days.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Hi, this is Tiffany Snyder with Digital to Learn. I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Tiffany.
And today we're joined with Chris Parrish of Podium Education.
Chris Parrish is Podium Education's president of university partnerships. Podium Education partners with universities to launch and run 4-credit tech skills programs delivered 100% online. After jobs in investment banking and consulting, Chris began his career in higher education a decade ago by helping institutions like UC Berkeley, Rice, and Pepperdine launch degrees in emerging technology areas like data analytics. He has since worked with dozens of universities to design unique programming that drives enrollment and boosts student outcomes. We are excited to welcome Chris to the Digital to Learn microphone.
Welcome, Chris.
It's so nice to be with you all. Thanks, Tiffany.
So we have a few very special get acquainted with you questions. The first of which is about potatoes. If you were a potato, which way would you like to be cooked?
Wow, great question. I don't think I've ever been asked this before. My wife and I are from two very different cultures and families. I grew up in the Poconos of Pennsylvania in the woods. And she grew up sort of, most of her family's from New York City, and she grew up just outside of Baltimore. And one of the few things that our families have in common in terms of culture is that her family, historically Jewish, they love latkes, and my family, historically Polish, we love a little something called a potato pancake. So those are essentially the same thing and one of the few cross sections of our diet. So I'll go with shredded fried potatoes.
Excellent choice.
How does she feel about you saying they're the same thing? She okay with that?
I think in general she agrees, but you know, where the rub is what you eat it with. So I tend to put, you know, ketchup next to my potato pancakes, but for latkes it's sour cream and applesauce. So it's a little different approach to the condiment style of things.
Okay, next question. Complete the sentence.
I wish everybody could learn to worry about what they can actually control. So this is something that I was spending a lot of time talking with my family about. I don't know when this podcast will drop, but it is Thursday. I actually don't know the date. Here, let me look at my cell phone quick. November 5th. So election was supposed to be decided on Tuesday. As we all know, it's now Thursday. It's still not decided. And I think this is one of the things that sort of I try and live my life by, which is, you know, there's so much craziness that goes around all of us professionally, personally, on a daily basis that I try and really zen into what I can control. And I think if everybody did that, we'd probably be, I don't know, maybe a little bit more measured as a society. So that's my wish.
Absolutely.
And one can only hope that if this podcast drops in December or January, that we'll actually have a president by then.
Yeah. A final call. All right. Using just one word, name something that drives your success.
Grit. I've always prided myself on lunch pail style work ethic. And I get that from my parents and my community and where I grew up. So I'd sum it up in 4 letters, grit.
Excellent.
Excellent answer.
Okay, when you were 6 years old, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Yeah, this one's easy. A chemist, but I don't think I really knew what a chemist did. So I was one of those kids that's very attracted to different materials and bright colors. And I used to love just mixing all sorts of different colored juices together. And I thought that's what a chemist did or a scientist did. So I guess I wanted to be a chemist, but it was probably more of like a Plato architect than anything.
Do you at least cook now?
Limited.
So that interest in mixing things didn't carry over to the food realm.
No, it hasn't yet.
All right, this one we're curious about. What is your go-to dance move?
You know what? That's a tough one. Wow, I should have read these prep questions before I interviewed here. But so the funny thing about dancing for me that I figured out is that I'm not the type of person to lead a dance floor. I just don't have that sort of rhythm or moves, but I'm really good at mimicking, right? And this is like, maybe this is like back to like my sales background, right? Like one of the ways to succeed in an interview, for instance, right, is to mimic the mannerisms and the pace of the person you're talking to. It makes them feel much more comfortable. So I'm really, if you put a couple good dancers around me, you know, I can sort of get by and mimic them, but it's going to be really hard for me to sort of lead a dance floor. So I don't have a go-to, unfortunately, but I can come up with some if I'm seeing other people do it first.
It's a good strategy. Brad and I work for Indiana Wesleyan University, the national and global campus. And so we first learned about Chris Parrish and his work with Podium Education by speaking with our colleagues who were confident that this is who we need to talk to. This is who we need to feature on this podcast. We're excited to learn more about your partnership with them and just your career in general and your ideas about digital teaching and learning. How and when did you first become interested in online learning?
Yeah, it's a great one to start off with. So I guess we're moving to the serious questions. That was fun. Thanks for that warm up. You know, for me, like I would love to tell you it was some big strategy that I had all along, but it truly wasn't. I got sort of lucky. I was an undergraduate student at the University of Maryland. This is back in 2008. And a little company called 2U was starting up just outside of the University of Maryland. And through a friend of a friend, I got connected to the founding COO, a guy named Chip Palsek, who's now their CEO. And for those of you who don't know, 2U is probably outside of Chegg, maybe the largest ed tech company in the US today. And as just a very young, you know, 19, 20 year old, started to see the future. And 2U, when they got started, they had a very distinct mission, which was they wanted to partner with the best, the most elite universities in the country and help them bring programs online. You know, for a long time, if you think back to 2009, most of the online content out there was just really low quality. And 2U had a vision that the elite brands could do it. Technology was catching up to the point where you could offer online coursework that was as good of an experience, if not better, than on campus. And you know, that was sort of a formative point in my career to see that online wasn't bad, even though the connotation was bad. It really wasn't bad when you saw it up close and you're intentional about the way that you design the coursework. And you know, from there, I've held a bunch of different roles in industry, which I'm sure we'll dig into, but that really sort of sparked my interest in digital education.
At the time that you made that transition, had you taken an online course?
No. I mean, they were completely foreign to undergraduates, especially at the University of Maryland at that time.
Huh. Interesting. So fast forward a bit. Now you're working with Podium Education.
Yeah.
Could you tell us initially the backstory of that company and kind of how it started and for what purpose?
Yeah, sure. We're young. For those listeners out there that are curious about what Podium Education is and how long we've been around, it has not been long. So we're just about 2 years old as a company. And, you know, really, we had seen a couple of interesting data points that I'll share with you all today. The first one is that there's obviously a ton of press out there. And if you have administrators listening to this podcast, certainly faculty, they're aware of this, that there are shrinking numbers of high school graduates, and therefore there's never been more pressure on college admissions offices, right? We sort of have this demographic shift where it's harder to find those incremental students, and therefore a lot of private universities, especially smaller privates, are under a lot of pressure to keep enrollment up. But what gets lost in that story is that actually on a percentage of the population basis, we have more four-year degree holders year over year than we ever had before. And that gets lost because we actually are doing a much better job on adult learners. We're doing a much better job with retention. So we're actually graduating more people as a percentage of our population with four-year degrees than ever before. Yeah, that sort of gets lost, but that's real data. And then on the other side of the coin, we have more college graduates than we've ever had before, but the tech skills gap has never been larger. And those two things for us at Podium never quite computed. Why is that? Why are we graduating people from college that don't have the skills needed for oftentimes the highest paying job, right, in these tech sectors? So all of that for us were sort of the first two signs that we thought there might be an opportunity here to do something a little different. And then the third sign was the immense pressure on college ROI that has now come up the last couple of years. So when I got my start in higher education, really getting my hands dirty, I was helping to launch a master's program with UC Berkeley. If I even mentioned the phrase ROI, I would get thrown off campus and probably buildings would be burned to the ground because that's how Berkeley rolls. Kidding, of course, but you know, ROI was a sensitive issue in higher education for a very long time. Now it's out in the open, which is where I think it should be. But this question of, is it worth it for me as an 18-year-old to go and spend 4 years at a college for a traditional residential experience, and especially at private label universities, right? You're paying a lot of money for that experience. Mm-hmm. Where's my payoff? How do I make sure that when I graduate, I can get one of those high-paying jobs? And those three things together, right? More college grads than ever, but the tech skills gap has never been larger. And there's more attention than ever on sort of why I'm entering college with a direct path to a career. We thought there was a better way to do it. So we started Podium with the idea being that we wanted to bring those in-demand tech skills, inject them into the undergraduate experience so that regardless of your major, regardless of whether you study English or theology or literature or biology, you can get the opportunity while you're in school to learn Excel and learn Tableau and SQL and Python and some of these other really critical skills needed for the modern workforce. So we got started just about 2 years ago and had a blast growing, building curriculum, and partnering with universities to do just that.
Awesome. What has your reception been like as you approach these different institutions and you sell this idea? You know, to me, it's obvious, like, oh, I want that. But I'm sure that is not the response everywhere. So what's it been like?
We've sort of had a more aggressive model, I guess I can say, to the way that we're running these programs at universities. So let me just hit the model real quick, because I think it's important context for reception. So the other thing we were thinking about when we started Podium was, there's something like 2,143, I think if I got the numbers right, 2,143 four-year degree granting institutions in the country. And that is a lot of accounting 101 courses, a lot of English 101 mm-hmm. courses, a lot of data science 101 courses that are being built at each one of those. So we felt like there was an opportunity to design a program and design a model that rewarded our partners for partnering with us versus trying to build something from scratch at their home institution. And a lot of this goes back to us of, we want to be on the right side of the cost curve when it comes to higher education. We're not trying to drive up the cost of higher education because, well, I think most people agree at this point, it's still too expensive. So what we decided to do was, okay, let's go out, hire our star faculty member. We work in the disciplines that are a step between traditional university and Silicon Valley, right? So think of like data analytics, web development, digital marketing. So we go out and sort of hire a star faculty member. And then we produce content and coursework at Netflix level quality and tie industry recognized certifications to the coursework. So students are not only getting the credit, but they're also getting these really in-demand certifications. And all of that takes a lot of money to build, right? A lot of time and money. But we do all that up front so that we can use that coursework and use it at a bunch of different university partners across the country. And what it allows our university partners to do is to have a turnkey approach to teaching some of these in-demand skills to their students. So, you know, that model is pretty aggressive because most higher ed institutions are used to building things in-house, right? They want to use their own faculty, their own support system, which I think is novel. But as you think about ways for the higher education system to get more efficient, I think this idea of utilizing these different platforms, Podium being one of them, to offer the right courses and the right programs to students in a cost-effective way is something that is at the forefront of a lot of administrators' minds these days. And I think rightfully so. So, you know, that's sort of model that Indiana Wesleyan might have a course that is quite similar to Creighton, which is maybe similar to what we're offering at Lafayette, a little controversial at first, but then when you sort of embrace the realities of the cost structure of higher ed, it starts to make a lot of sense.
So if I'm a university and you've made this pitch and I say, let's do this, do I then list your course in the catalog and then students who take that would come to your platform to take the course?
So it's a little more nuanced. It's your course code and your university faculty actually teach the course.
Okay.
So what's important to note is like, you can almost think of the Podium relationship with a university is a little bit of like a souped up book publisher. So you're delivering a data analytics course, but that data analytics course is delivered utilizing a lot of the programming, the content that Podium's helped constructed. But it all lives under the academic oversight and curricular oversight of our university partners. Podium is not an accredited institution. We have no ambition to be a direct-to-consumer brand of any sorts. Everything is done through our university partners. It's an important piece of the equation.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then the courses that you're writing before the relationship, the partnerships are made with universities, or after a few partnerships have been made and similarities have been identified?
Well, if you want the real answer, it's a little bit of both. I would love to say that we have everything built, but we're a startup. So
yeah.
Sometimes you gotta build the plane as you're flying it a little bit. But so where we're at right now is, for those interested, we actually just came out of stealth mode for the first time as a company, which sounds a whole lot cooler than it actually is. Basically what it means is we couldn't talk about ourselves for 2 years. So EdSurge just did a big announcement on us 2 weeks ago and wrote a really nice article about our model, which everybody can Google, it's out there. And it's nice because previous to that, if I was talking to an institution and somebody Googled Podium Education, it's like our website. And then there's an executive education company in Pakistan that owns Podium at Podium Education on Twitter. So it wasn't the most like reputable first page on Google. So we're glad to get a little press on that side.
Yeah.
But the reason the press itself is around our Series A, which is sort of a funding round that we took on. We took on $12 million. And we did that because we had built our first programming in data analytics and we wanted to go faster on the other areas. So we're building digital marketing right now, and we're also building web development. And our fourth track will be tech cloud operations. So we have data analytics and we're building the others that'll be ready for summer 2021.
Awesome. Well, I am curious, what have you found to be the most in-demand tech skills? And are there others that are on the move? So my background's actually in career development, and I remember seeing lists and priorities from employers. Mm-hmm. It didn't change a lot from year to year, but I think the world is different now. Mm-hmm. So I am curious if some of those desired tech skills are on the move and inching in on priority level.
No, it's a great question. Maybe a sort of a data-driven answer there is one of the great things that our chief data scientist, Dr. Robert Alvarez, did for us was early on, he built us an algorithm that basically crawls Indeed.com and can pull all the open jobs within a certain number of miles from each key city in the country.
Wow.
with a list of keywords, right? Job keywords. So things related to data skills and tech skills, right? There's a list of them, 25 of them or so, and it'll pull it and show us the number of open jobs today for within that region and those skills. And one of the coolest things about this is we pull the numbers and it's, thousands of jobs and it looks awesome from a sales standpoint, right? But like, what's way more interesting is if I pulled a Rolodex of all those jobs for you and you started to look through the titles. Sure, there's data scientists in there, there's data analysts in there, there's software engineers, all the things you would come to expect. But the majority of the job titles are the same ones that we've been seeing for 15 and 20 years. It's now just such that the HR manager, the compliance specialist, they need Excel, right? They need Tableau. They need some of these skills where even 5-10 years ago, you weren't expected to have these skills as an HR manager. But I mean, people analytics is the name of the game these days. Like you've got to be able to analyze all these large data sets that come through. So I think my direct answer to that is understanding data and being comfortable with data is a skill that we believe every undergraduate, regardless of major, should have in their toolkit.
And I think that set of skills, every year when they do these surveys of things employers want, it just keeps creeping up the list.
Yeah.
Where 5 years ago, it wasn't even on the list.
Right.
Now it's up to number three or four.
Yeah, and I always think about, one of the things that I would love to get both of your takes on is like when, and this sometimes this point short circuits some of the like legacy academics that I talk to on a daily basis. So hopefully I won't short circuit anybody here, but this idea that like we should always be, we being Podium should create a major in this or a minor in this. And we do have a minor in Up to This, but we're not creating majors because we don't want anybody to replace their core pursuit of study. But like this idea that it needs to be a minor to me is something that I'm starting to reflect on a lot more, because it's sort of like, that's like a self-constructed bucket of courses that we've deemed as important in academia, right? Like whatever a minor is, 18 credits at most universities. And the reality is, as I mentioned before, we actually would feel really good if every student on every college campus just got the first two courses in our data analytics sequence in particular. Mm-hmm. And when I say that to folks in the academy, sometimes it makes them like, wait, what is two courses? Like, is that a concentration? Is it a serving? I was like, no, it's nothing. It's like,
it's two courses.
Just two courses. Yeah, exactly. I think that's probably a microcosm of this like overall evolution towards like micro credentials and some of these other things. But we haven't broken down the course into like micro parts of the course, but we do think like standalone courses mm-hmm. should be emphasized more in a student's journey through their undergraduate work than certainly than just concentrations or just minors or just majors. And I don't know, I'd love to hear sort of your thoughts on that.
As you were describing that, I was wondering, what if I go to a university that rejects the idea of adopting Podium education courses? Mm-hmm. But I really believe as a student, I need those skills. Is it likely there'll be a version of your courses that are intended for that audience?
I love this question.
Go, Brad!
Yes. So what's been fascinating about this whole process is, at least on the data analytics side, like let's just triangulate into that for a second. Almost every one of our university partners right now has existing expertise on campus from faculty in mm-hmm. business analytics, data science, computer science, right? Something tangentially related to what we teach. So naturally, when somebody finds out about Podium and you know we're brought into a big room with 10 faculty staring at me, it's oftentimes like there is a little bit of natural territorialness there, which I totally get. But what has usually been looked at as a life raft for those faculty, even in like, even if they have a course that is maybe the exact same title as a course that we have, what they sort of start to grok is the way that we teach this material is so inherently different from the way that they might teach it in their major or their minor. So what I mean by that is oftentimes these data analytics minors or data science minors are stacked in such a way that it's really not accessible for students from all majors and all backgrounds. So maybe if you want to do a minor in data science, you got to take operating systems first, calculus mm-hmm. two next, and then data structures and algorithms. And like by the time you get through all that, you've lost all the people that were, you know, English majors, and it's just too scary, right? So we sort of think of it from the perspective of, I mentioned University of Maryland before. I went to University of Maryland for undergraduate and then did some graduate work at Tufts. And almost all my classes follow the sequence of, you know, get some theory up front. And then each week you get a problem set. That's sort of how you show you can apply what you just learned. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, you know, at the end of the term, you'll get a project. And that's how you get context on how this thing works in the real world. We decided, since we wanted to teach relatively technical concepts to students from all backgrounds, right? It might be non-technical. We had to come up with a way to like unlock that math phobia or like ensure that math phobia didn't seep mm-hmm. in. So we flip it. So each week's worth of content for us starts with a real world company case study. So before we even teach somebody what hypothesis testing is, right, which is an important statistical framework, we're first explaining to them that when Tiffany and I are sitting on our couch at night and we're looking for Tiger King on Netflix, Tiffany's seeing a different piece of artwork than I'm seeing because we're from two different demographics. We have two different viewing history. And Netflix was really the first media company to figure out that it's the artwork they show us that is the most important variable to us to get us to click through. That's an A-B test. That's a hypothesis test. So before we even introduce that concept to a student, we're showing them how it works in real life. And it's been a key part to us unlocking that non-STEM student. So they're like, oh, this is super interesting. Like I should learn this and invest my time.
That's wonderful. That is exciting.
I'm interested. I want to learn. You got me. Thanks for being with us on Digital to Learn. That was part one of a two-part series with Chris Parrish of Podium Education. We're going to be back next week with part two. Join us.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.